I remember it as if it were yesterday. And when I got up there, they took me to the principal's office to register me. And when they left me up there, I thought the world had come to an end because I didn't know nobody, 7-year-old boy, among strangers. It was a real rough time for me at that time.
The whole world has changed in the past 70 years, but for the blind and visually handicapped, expectations and opportunities are a world away from Alabama's School for the Negro Deaf and Blind that Jimmy Carter first attended in 1939.
I'm alone and motherless ever since I was a child.
From PRI, Public Radio International, this is Heavenly Sight. I'm Dave Marish. What helped smooth things for Jimmy at the blind school was music.
It was one of the main courses. We had piano, guitar, voice. It wasn't the main thing, I take that back. Vocation was the main thing that they were interested in. The only real opportunity that the blind people had back then for education was caning chairs, making brooms and mops, just physical hand stuff.
No wonder Jimmy Carter, Clarence Fountain, Johnny Fields, George Scott, and Olise Thomas, the five blind boys, chose music. But by the early 60s, when Larsine Turk was attending that same school, choices and horizons were expanding.
It ain't no harm to praise the Lord, is it, y'all? Everything that has breath ought to praise the Lord.
So I didn't get exposure to the manual things, such, you know, trade-oriented at that time. I started off learning Braille and how to count and how to write with what they called a slate and all. To me, that was a major accomplishment, that I was able to write something in code, feel something with my fingers, and found that it was making sense. And I was then able, each time I would go home, to at least talk to them on a much higher level about words and beginning to make sentences and what have you. So my expectations then were beginning to rise.
Help is on the way. Hold on.
Today, in addition to singing, Larsine Turk runs the Birmingham Regional Center for the Alabama Institute for the Deaf and Blind. Valerie Capers was blessed, she says, after losing her sight at age 6, to be sent to the New York Institute for the Education of the Blind.
It was a school that provided an education for me that my parents could never have afforded. It was really almost having a rich girl's education.
Valerie more than fulfilled her preparation at the New York Institute when she was admitted to study music at Juilliard. But it wasn't easy for her or for the school.
That was quite a challenge. It didn't matter if you had the highest marks possible. The institutions were afraid of having you come to the school because they thought, for one thing, that they would be open to a liability if a blind person hurt themselves in some way, had an accident. Believe it or not, there were people who felt uncomfortable about having a person with a disability, a blind person around. They weren't too happy about that.
This was in the 1960s, when the civil rights and human rights movements were opening up opportunities for black Americans. But Henry Butler says even then, one of his teachers tried to make his comfort zone into Henry's prison.
One guy, when I was a junior in high school, brought me in and we did a battery of tests. And And he told me, he said, you know, you did very well on your tests, and especially the reasoning part, the whatever that meant. But I'd like to see you do something with your hands. Rather than going to college, I'd rather see you be a piano tuner.
Then in college at Michigan State University.
I wanted to be in some of the operas since I was a voice major. And they advised me not to do that because I was blind and I wouldn't know the layout of the stage. And well, then just show me. You know, I mean, it could have been done, but I had teachers who just were afraid of that.
Still, Henry says, the good teaching that he got at the then still segregated Louisiana School for African American Children helped make him what he is today.
They made us work harder. They understood that we had to work twice as hard in an environment, in the kind of environment that we were in. So they stayed on us. It was like tough love almost all the time. It was hard to take sometimes, you know. But all these blind people taught these kids with care, with the understanding that it's not easy out there, especially in those days, it wasn't easy.
In recent years, Henry Butler has turned teacher himself, creating music programs in Indiana and Louisiana, and learning how blind children learn best.
They're forced to acquire a different set of learning skills. They have to internalize what they're learning probably more than most sighted kids. We did an informal test or an informal survey, so to speak, and we discovered almost immediately with almost every blind student in that program that they were able to concentrate more deeply than most sighted kids, and they were able to focus more quickly than most of the sighted kids.
Numberless are the world's wonders.
But what about second sight, that quality that Gospel of Colonus director Lee Brewer says that he and audiences assume blind people have?
I think that if you start to think about it, if you can't see, your hearing is doubled and tripled, and your feeling is double and tripled, and you're enormously sensitive to energy and vibrations that's coming through the auditory system and basically through the skin. Working with the blind boys for 28 years now, I got to know something about this and how they work.
Jimmy Carter of the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Well, I know that when you are deprived of a sense, the other senses are more manifest. You can hear better. You can catch a vibration better. You do have a vision. You know, it's just something that you have, that when God takes a sense away from you, he gives you the other four. It's something that he enhances, you know, about that.
It makes sense from the perspective of those who look at or feel that a blind person has these, quote, extra senses, if you will.
Larsine Turk.
But that isn't so. It's just that I have to use one sense more than you have to use that sense. I listen a whole lot for a lot of things that you don't necessarily listen to. It doesn't mean that you can't hear them. But I depend on those for travel, etc. And you depend on your eyes. So I have to train them, you know, to listen for those things that I would have otherwise have seen.
I can see so much,
so much,
see so much
that the Lord,
has done.
Maybe because of literature, you know, and Shakespeare and the Greeks and all that business, they seem to give an additional, as you said, that second sight.
Singer, pianist, composer, Valerie Capers.
They seem to think that we have a very special kind of gift to our music, which they're hoping that they will recognize that gift when they hear it.
It may be true, may not be. We don't really know.
Henry Butler.
I say it's that line of thought is based on sentimentality. And if we think that people think that, we find a way to use that in a constructive way so that everybody benefits.
Today, after more than 200 years of American music and culture, our current favorite musics, rock, pop, jazz, hip-hop, Broadway, and classical, have all been tuned to the call and response, the rhythm and emotion of gospel. It's something the sighted and the blind can see and hear. You'll find photos, video, interviews, and more, including a complete program playlist at heavenlysight.org. That's heavenlysight.org. Heavenly Sight, Lost Sight and Found Vision is an Artemis Media and Murray Street production, written and reported by Dave Marish. Our producers, Steve Rath, David Bales, Kathy Farnell, Anita Merck, Alexa Lim, Matthew Long Middleton, and Margaret Bresnahan. Web design and production by Flyleaf Creative, Alex Grichon, Ray Archie, and Tom Canoy. Our legal counsel is Ernest T. Sanchez. Our thanks to Lee Brewer and composer Bob Telson, the creators of The Gospel at Colonus, and David Bromberg, Henry Butler, Jimmy Carter, Jennifer Cutting, Eleanor Ellis, Ben Manila, and BMP Audio Productions, Ricky McKinney, and Margaret Pick. Thanks also to our scholars and historians, Drs. Richard Bailey, Valerie Capers, David Evans, Joe Hickerson, M.K. Holbrook, Jerma Jackson, Bernice Johnson Reagan, Kip Lornell, Terry Rowden, and Tonia Stewart, along with Kevin Nutt and Larsine Turk. You can hear the music from this program and find our extended interviews at heavenlysight.org. I'm Dave Marish.
Support for this program and the site heavenlysight.org was provided by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks, and by grants from the Alabama State Council on the Arts. Additional support comes from this station and Public Radio International stations nationwide and the PRI Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Support for development of Heavenly Sight is sought from listeners and friends through Kickstarter, a new way to find, fund, and follow creativity. Kickstarter.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.